The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
For movies today, we're joined by Dee Malumbi of entertainment.ie and Gordon Hayden, the film critic for Ireland AM on Virgin Media One. So let's start with a movie that's been getting a lot of publicity. You know, Danny Boyle was here on the station previously, the director of previously Trainspotting 2 and Steve Jobs and various other movies. Yesterday sounds like it's something entirely different, Dee.
Although it is, I think, the most in line with his film Slumdog Millionaire, you know, because
which
that's
was a really excellent movie.
Exactly, which is like full of romance and music. So probably in terms of films, those would be the most alike. But this is written by Richard Curtis. And when you listen to
the plot, Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, About Time, Love Actually as well, mm-hmm. I think. It's very much of a Richard Curtis aesthetic in terms of story. I think that where the Danny Boyle stamp comes into it is really in terms of the way it's shot, because it has these fancy, you know, zippy shots and cool zoom-ins and stuff like that. But just to tell you a bit about the story, it follows this struggling singer-songwriter named Jack Malik, who is played by Himesh Patel, who EastEnders fans would know, actually. But he's close to giving up on his dream of becoming a world-famous musician. He's just not going anywhere. And then he suffers this mysterious accident during a blackout. And when he wakes up, everyone except him has forgotten the existence of the Beatles, and all of their music have just been completely wiped from existence. So he decides to use this to his advantage, and he starts singing the songs and gaining more and more fame. Eventually, Ed Sheeran, who plays himself in this film, takes him under his wing and helps his career that way. He gets a new manager. However, his loyal best friend, Ellie, who has been in love with him forever, is being left behind.
Yeah, this sounds like a familiar element, that anyways, and that goes into a lot of these movies. What's it like, Gordon? Is it enjoyable?
It is enjoyable, but it does for me feel like a film of two halves. You definitely feel Danny Boyle has the grip on the first half, because that's where I think it works its best, because he's got such an inventive setup. The cast is great. But then Richard Curtis leans on this tried and tested rom-com formula. You just mentioned it there yourself. We've kind of seen this before. The protagonist, he gains the riches, he gains the fame, but then has a realization that, you know what? What's it all about? This really isn't me. This is not the person I am. I should really be with this girl who I've actually kind of shunned away in order to achieve this success. And so it's him trying to win her back.
Don't give away too much of it, Gordon. Although there's how can you give away something that quite clearly is in sort of a well-trodden path?
Yeah, it's been well signposted. But look, the cast are so likable. Of course, the music is amazing in it, and that kind of helps. So it does have a party atmosphere. And at the screening during the week, just before the end credits started, there's just a little pause of a few seconds, and just somebody just kind of shouted out, kind of without realising, ah, that was lovely. And that's the sort of the film it is. It is nice, but my problem is, Richard Curtis, I just wish you didn't do a bit of a copy and paste. If anything, I would love to have seen this premise, but with Danny Boyle and working with Ricky Gervais. Because the original idea for this didn't come from Richard Curtis. It came from a struggling screenwriter by the name of Jack Barth, who actually worked on this with Mackenzie Crook, who played Gareth,
The Office.
In The Office. They were the two that first came up with it. And then they kind of went off and did their own thing. And Jack Barth, he wasn't really... he needed to make money. And so essentially he sold it on. And that's when Richard Curtis got involved. And I just would wonder that maybe if he kind of held off and gave it to someone like Ricky Gervais, it could have got more of a cynical edge to it. And I think that's kind of what it needed.
Hey, let's have a clip from it.
When I find myself in times of trouble.
Would you like a drink, Terry?
Dad.
Well, I'd already heard that bit.
You'll get beer, please, Jed.
Excellent. Carry on, Jacko. I'll be back.
Hurry it up, darling. You're losing the crowd. Okay.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes.
Hello, love. I'm just at Jed and Sheila's house listening to Jack's new song, Let Him Be.
Let It Be.
Let It Be. Listen, I'll call you back when it's over, all right?
All right, carry on broadcasting, young man.
Maybe start after the first bit. I've heard it three times.
Christ, this is Let It Be! You're the first people on earth to hear this song. Oh, that'll be Marge.
She's
going to come round. Oh, yeah.
Well, that went well.
All a bit cutesy.
It does get quite schmaltzy. But again, the gags are quite strong in the first half of the film. I just wish that they could have tried something a little bit different, because in the original screenplay, by all accounts, even with this immense back catalogue, the main character that Jack Malik has, he still can't craft the songs, and so he still struggles. Whereas in this one, I think the success just comes a bit too easy.
Actually, you mentioned Ed Sheeran, and when Danny Boyle was a guest in Dermot and Dave a couple of weeks ago, he spoke how they couldn't get Chris Martin from Coldplay to be the pop star. So that's where they went for Ed Sheeran. Let's hear it.
We tried to get Chris Martin first, because Chris Martin is actually a much better actor than Ed Sheeran. But then once we dealt with the disappointment of not getting Chris Martin because he was too busy, we decided to work on Ed. And we said to him, we said to him, he's keen and he's a beautiful man. Mm. He really is. And I said to him, you've got to come to rehearsals. And you can't just think, because you're a performer anyway and you're playing yourself, that you can just drop in on the day and do it. Because I think that's what leads to those embarrassing cameos.
I agree, yeah.
Because they're out of sync with the other actors, and they just look, when they're in the company of quality actors, they can look a bit out of their depth. But he was wonderful, and he did the rehearsal, took it very seriously. And we had this amazing moment where Jack Malik, who's played by this guy, Himesh Patel, actually had to play in the rehearsal in front of Ed Sheeran, for real, play a Beatles song. And Sheeran said he genuinely meant it. He said, that guy's got soul. He's like, I don't know what it is, but he's got soul. And you can't nail it to the wall. You can't kind of affect it. You can ruin it.
Yeah.
But if you can keep it, it's very special.
Okay. And Danny Boyle, I remember he was a guest on this programme at the time when he brought out Slumdog Millionaire. Listener Jimmy says Slumdog Millionaire and the horrendous book it's based on are the two worst pieces of literature and cinema ever made.
That's harsh.
I enjoyed Slumdog Millionaire. Anyway, Dee, I'm really sorry to hear you're missing the premiere of the new Spider-Man Far From Home movie to be with us tonight.
Yes, that's right. But okay. I mean, I'll see it next week and I'll probably like review it in full then. So.
Okay. What's the word on it though?
I think it's been getting a really positive reception so far. People are especially praising the post-credit scenes in it. So for Marvel fans, the post-credits are always kind of a big deal. And there was outrage when there were no post-credits at the end of Endgame. They were like, what is this? But also it's been getting a lot of praise for Jake Gyllenhaal has finally joined the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So people are very excited for that. He plays Mysterio. And people are also talking about it really setting up the kind of next phase of the Marvel movies now that post-Endgame, where apparently there'll be multiple like timelines and dimensions.
It's impossible to keep up with all this stuff, Gordon, isn't it?
I know, we've kind of hit a bit of superhero fatigue, let's be
you
honest
think
with
so,
you.
Because that is not the model, the business model these studios are working on. It's nothing to do with art anymore. Well, maybe was it ever, but it's all about setting up these structures for as many movies as possible a year. Limited. The amount of superhero movies now is utterly dominating.
Oh, yeah. Everyone wants a cinematic universe. And other studios have tried. Universal Studios a few years ago, if anyone remembers their Dark Universe, where they were going to resurrect all these classic monsters and Tom Cruise led the charge with The Mummy. And then, unfortunately, that came a cropper. And then that cinematic universe didn't happen. So it doesn't always work. But Marvel have had the best success of late. You have to look at DC. They're only finally getting things back on track. But with this time out, their golden goose is gone. So I suppose if anyone hasn't seen Avengers Endgame, spoiler alert, Tony Stark is no more. So they now have to pick up the pieces. So Spider-Man Far From Home has to do a few things. It has to be an epilogue to Endgame. It also then, as Dee rightly says, it has to then do a bit of world building for Phase 4. And it also has to be a standalone film in its own right. And it still has to try and continue this sort of John Hughes-like feel that the first film brought about.
We have a clip from Spider-Man Far From Home.
Heads up. Nick Fury's calling you.
Nick Fury's going to call me?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because he probably has some hero stuff for you to do. You're a superhero. He calls superheroes.
Well, I mean, if it was really that important, he'd probably call someone else, not me.
Apparently not. That's it. No caller ID? That's him.
I don't really want to talk to Nick
Fury.
Answer
the phone.
Why?
Because if you don't talk to him, then I have to talk to him. I don't want to talk to him.
Well, why don't you want to talk to him?
Because I'm scared. Just answer the phone. You sent Nick Fury to voicemail?
Yeah.
You don't send Nick Fury to voicemail.
Did you hear that? They're calling me. I gotta go. I gotta go.
You gotta talk to him.
I'm gonna call him. I promise you, I'm gonna call him. I will.
You do not ghost Nick Fury.
Okay, we'll find out more about it from you next week. Tell us about Metal Heart. This is a new Irish movie which Hugh O'Connor has directed.
Yeah, so Hugh O'Connor, people will probably know better as an actor. He starred in The Three Musketeers, Stag, Your Bad Self, and other kind of Irish TV and film productions over the years. So this is directorial feature debut, and it follows two, they're twins, the fraternal twin sisters, Emma and Chantel. They have completely different personalities. One is a shy goth who is hoping to set up this rock band with her best friend Gary. The other one is Chantel, and she is blonde and beautiful and popular among all her friends and everything. So their parents go away for the summer, and their sibling rivalry kind of comes to a head, but also their worlds that have always been so separate almost start to merge, because this mysterious man who is played by Mo Dunford in the film moves in next door, and he kind of starts to form a relationship with both girls. So there are some kind of, you know, there are hints of something more sinister going on, but ultimately it really is just one of your typical kind of coming of age comedy dramas. And I think that there are a lot of hints of John Hughes in here, but also I think it would really fit neatly into kind of this Netflix new cycle of teen comedy dramas that we're seeing come out, films like The Perfect Date, All the Boys I've Loved Before, The Kissing Booth. So I'm not sure how, you know, I think that Irish films unfortunately always struggle at the box office, but I would love to see a film like this go onto a platform on Netflix, because I think that there's a really big audience for it in there.
It kind of looks a little bit like Sing Street in that sort of the tone and the style, and that's just that heightened sense of humour. It almost
Sing Street was great.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a B-side to that.
B-side, I like that. By the way, I believe the Queen's Corgi is awful, is it?
Oh, it's dreadful. And it's weird. It's a weird movie.
This is an animation, isn't it?
It's an animation,
so you've got voices
yeah.
like Jack Whitehall and Matt Lucas, Julie Walters, Ray Winston.
Yeah, there's a great cast in there, but they all sound kind of wooden and their voices are almost kind of whiny, as if they were totally misdirected. I think that basically The Queen's Corgi is a film that comes out between Toy Story 4 and The Lion King, which are the big, you know, animated family features that you're going to bring your kids to this year. And it's kind of, you know, it's
I'm
a
not
bit
bringing
of a
my
filler
kids
movie.
To The Lion King. If somebody else can bring them, I am not going to The Lion King.
Why not? Is that just because of the Disney model?
Because I've seen the school play perform so many times, I'm fed up of it. I'm fed up of seeing kids dressed up as The Lion King without watching a live animation, but I'm sure I'm going to have to talk about it in the next few weeks to come. Anyway, listen, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Gordon Hayden and Dee Malumbi from entertainment.ie.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.